So let's go back to the basics. Is variable really that much? Is it that much risk as the banks or as lenders say it is? You know, is it risky to go variable?
Historically, no.
Mm-hmm. So why do we fear it?
Because nobody knows what's going to happen in the next little while.
The banks also make more money.
We're going to need a lot more time than this if we're going to have this conversation, because the reality is there's a whole movement right now. The global banks all around the world have decided that they're going to jack up inflation, and they're going to counter that, and they're going to try to keep it in check by keeping interest rates up. They're trying to reevaluate the value of money. $1 million today isn't $1 million tomorrow.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. Well, that's what they're trying to do. That's the fastest way to pay debt for governments.
Sure.
Right? Is by reevaluating what the real value of currency is through inflation. And you see it all around the world. You know, every major bank seems to want to be pushing your interest rates up because they're all trying to combat inflation. So the question is how aggressive are they going to go before they say, I can't do it anymore? And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. We'll know this year. The Bank of Canada is going to be watching very closely. This whole generation of buyers are going to be renewing at interest rates north of 3% to see what the impact is on them.
Sure.
How many of those people are going to have to refinance and re-amortize in order to keep their payment in line, you know, versus the people just going to be able to accept the payment? Will there be some type of sell-off? Will people unload with some real estate because of the pressure of the ownership of the servicing costs now on the mortgage? Those are the questions that are going to be asked a lot.
So let me ask you a question. You know, with mortgages becoming, you know, harder to get and thus creating less of a market for the banks, are you not seeing the margins for the banks get lower and lower year over year? Because I'm seeing them. I look at the bond market compared to where they're currently offering, and it's a lot different than 3 years ago. And could we now say, sure, you can put them as much pressure as you want, but if the banks need the volume, they're going to cut their margins?
Well, because the banks have created this war. Not for nothing, but too. Our whole banking system has been so aggressively pushed around the mortgage product. So they basically was a race to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Now the consumers have benefited from that. The question is, will banks, as a monopoly, start changing their mindset? I could tell you that. You always see it in interest rate changes. When interest rates go down, you know, you always see some banks pause and wait. And they're trying to see if they can contain the market and try to create some influence. And then they all end up going down with each other.
But I
don't know.
Rules,
it's going to be interesting to see how banks
react. With the rules being more difficult, I think now the banks can say, you know what? We've got a slightly more flexible program. These are our rates. Take it or leave it.
Well, are also being warned by the World Bank that it's time to get off credit.
Yeah.
You can't keep building this economy solely off of credit.
Yeah.
So the warnings are out. We know the regulatory changes that are coming out next year, where there's going to be more regular auditing of credit on a regular basis for consumers, because banks now need to report their risk on a regular basis. On an individual basis, not even just a portfolio mix.
Right.
So with all this going on, you know, the question isn't how are banks going to compete? Are they going to reduce their margins? Will banks even be interested in continuing this business? Are they going to shift their attention to a different sector and re-diversify their portfolio and reduce their credit exposure? If that's the case, and if you're a consumer, you know, you're not going to have people fighting for
okay, but now you're changing the whole definition of what banking is.
Yeah. No.
Oh, how historically banks make money.
Banking has always made money off a variety of different asset classes, not just credit, right?
Correct, but their main source has been credit.
It's been the fastest growing source the last 25 years. Right. Yeah. Where, you know, the boomer generation was that first generation who decided that credit is good.
Right.
Right? And since then, we've got an economy built on credit.
Yep.
Right. That's why they're the first retired generation that are retiring at a large percentage of them are retiring with debt, which never happened before. You think of your grandparents, they never retired with debt.
No, absolutely not.
My grandparents back in the old days in Portugal, geez, there was no mortgages. There was no financing.
Yeah.
You know, if you needed money and a loan, you go to the richest guy in town, you ask him for a loan and he'd sign a piece
collateral.
Of paper. They both signed the next and nobody knew how to write. And he would take some land as collateral.
Or some cash.
Like it was, an honor system and so forth. But barter. But it's the world has changed, man.
I mean, look at the environment we're in now. We're buying $1 million condos in big urban markets as a first-time home buyer to with massive amount of a mortgage and payments. Like, well, just yes, a crazy, crazy world that we're in right now. The income hasn't kept up with this.
We're gonna have two videos by the time we're done here today. with the whole thing about, well, we can edit this and do two videos, but the whole
We don't edit anything.
It's the thing about the condo market is a whole other conversation. And the marketability. And I think at the end of the day, if consumers are coming out here and people are thinking that, wow, you know, affordable housing and all this stuff that I keep hearing about, I'm totally support that there has to be some kind of affordable housing program for people who need affordable housing. And there's a difference between people who need affordable housing and people who feel they're entitled to affordable housing.
Right.
The people who need it are the low income people who need the extra support, because they are here to fulfill a part of our economy and certain employment jobs that the average person is not prepared to take. We need to support those people. We need to support the families, new immigrant families who came, who are here and starting off.
We're all immigrants.
And we're promised, this golden opportunity, and they come and recognize that their education is no longer being supported. So they're going back to school. We need to support those communities, low-income communities that are not given on the same equal opportunities. A variety of work needs to be done. But this whole notion that Toronto should be, first-time buyer's paradise, is over.
Yeah.
We want a world-class city. And the minute you want a world-class city, you get world-class prices.
Yep.
That's the reality. Go look at New York.
Yeah.
But New York has gone through this 20 years ago.
Yep.
They're still going through. It's a never-ending saga for them.
Well, when you take currency into account as well, we're, pretty much flat. The world.
But you're also going to see, supply and demand is a major driver for that. As incomes are growing and people's expectations for what they can receive for that purchase price, for that $1 million valuation, their expectations start changing and adjusting. They're going to keep bidding up prices unless you flood the market with supply. And I don't see that happening.
No. Right. So it's not going to happen. So, mortgage qualification is getting harder. Rates are increasing.
But the demand is still there. I actually read that the Toronto and Vancouver market were on the top five, fastest growing real estate markets, possibly bubbles in the world, because of how much demand there is. But
is it a bubble? We've been hearing the bubble thing for 15, 20 years.
Just the headline of the article, obviously, as a clickbait. But I don't think so, because I think there's a massive amount of demand for a very limited supply, like you're saying.
It's new employment growth. Look, Toronto's become... I didn't realize it happened, but Toronto became a tech hub all of a sudden. But not just
slowly. It's been doing it for a long time.
It was slow for a while, but the last 5 years, it completely changed.
That's
over.
Great. That's great for Toronto. Kind of get away from this whole banking.
So go ask yourself industry. what happened with Seattle when Amazon decided they're going to move some of their major operations there.
Yep.
Housing market. Go tell me what happened in the housing market there in the last 5 years. It went through the roof. Why? Because the average income jumped up.
Sure.
So the local resident who feels that, this is my city, I'm sorry, it's not. It's no longer a blue-collar city. Toronto's not about manufacturing. It's, in the 80s, we had more printing presses per capita in the world. Printing presses.
Mm-hmm.
We were the number one printing press in the world. That was our claim to
represent
fame.
Toronto.
And now, imagine if we try to hold on to that old economy. We'd be devastated. We've moved on to technology. We've moved on into the finance industry and become the financial hub of the country, and a global financial hub now that has expanded.
And a growing technical, big
with
technical
the high tech,
IT player.
It's just going to keep going like this, And Vancouver is the same thing. Vancouver has got a huge real estate issue in the sense that their geography prevents it. The mountains and the ocean. They're stuck on an island pretty much, right?
Yep.
So this isn't going to end anytime soon. And I think you're going to find is that
prices
people are going
to
be surprised, right? Prices are going to rise.
People are going to still want to live here because everything is
Well, you have net
here.
Migration. It's literally that simple.
And the people who want more affordable housing will move to areas where they can get a larger home.
Well, you can create
and,
affordable housing for people who truly need affordable housing in the city.
They're going to continue to have those programs.
But that first-time buyer family who's making 150 grand a year and they think they have the right to live in Toronto in a detached home. It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
But that low-income family who has to rely on transit in order to be able to create a life for themselves and create an opportunity for them, something should happen for them.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to cry about taxes. I'm going to be the very first one. As a Torontarian, born and raised, lives in Toronto, owns real estate in Toronto, multiple assets in Toronto, I am perfectly happy if the City of Toronto said, I'm jacking up your taxes by 20%. If it really, really, truly went to transportation and really, truly went to housing for those low-income groups. I have another whole
theory on that. Since we've already gone over, fuck it. My personal belief to help bring in some revenues for Toronto and maybe other cities is we should be applying a toll for anyone who's driving into the city.
Oh my God, tolls? Jeez, the rest of the whole world's doing tolls. All of a sudden in Canada, it's like a foreign thing. I totally agree with you.
But I'm just saying, why are totally we charging tolls to come into the city like the rest of the world?
Yes.
And we're going to use that money to apply towards infrastructure, fix up the Gardner, fix up half the stuff that should have been done decades ago if we want to be a real world-class city. And if the reality is, I don't know what the percentage of the suburbanites come into the city to work, but they're the ones who are creating this congestion and stress on the traffic. Charge a toll. People will rethink how they're going to get into the city. Maybe they're going to carpool. Maybe take the GO train, which is a better option anyways. And that way we have a little bit less congestion.
If
we can apply the money towards the city. Like that's a simple tax.
If people leave their cars on the outer perimeter and they take the transit, and that service is transit, that will be revenue for transit. Sure. So that works well.
I'm completely fine with that.
If they want to drive in and sit in the Don Valley for an hour, that's great too. But pay the toll.
Pay the toll. Don't complain about it.
I have no problem as a Torontarian who drives in and out of the city multiple times. I have no problem paying the toll because I go to Europe and Portugal. It costs me, I think it was like $10 to get home.
How beautiful is it? How beautiful is it?
It costs me $10 to get home.
Driving through those highways, no problem.
Yeah, but then you're okay.
Wait, in an economy where the average income, the minimum wage is like $750.
Look,
people are paying $10 to get to the city.
Here's the thing, though. We're in a predicament because, okay, sure, I agree with paying tolls and all that fun stuff. I love the 407. I'm on the 407 all day long.
It's pretty nice.
Right? I get it.
When I have to take it.
But here's the thing. You put a toll on the DVP or the Gardner Expressway or any other road that you want, it's not going to work because the infrastructure is not there.
The tolls will be minimal. It has to be less.
But even if it's minimal... Like,
but the toll isn't for having a better experience. The toll is for coming to Toronto, just like in New York.
The toll is to decrease congestion.
Yes.
But it doesn't mean that the streets should be improved immediately. They should just apply a toll. You come to the city, hopefully over time they can make changes to make those streets a little bit smoother. But the toll is, if you want the privilege of coming to the city, you're going
to
pay a toll.
Yeah, you have to create transit. You have to give, if you're going to take tolls on the highway, which I think is a great idea, and I think this is it's a political hot potato and everyone's afraid to get engaged.
Just do
in
it.
On it. Charging people $5 to get in and out of the city, they'll pay the $10, I think.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe it's $2. Maybe it's $4. I don't know what it is.
I really don't know.
But at the end of the day, that money needs to go to infrastructure, and the infrastructure needs to be under transit. The other thing is as good as our transit system is, it's quite sad. I've been to cities
really
around the world that have populations that are 10% of our population, and their transit system puts ours to shame.
Yeah.
Because it's fully connected to the suburbs.
Yeah.
So all these things that we're talking about Scarborough and stuff, people around the world look at us and laugh at us because they're like, wait, we've connected our whole city, and we have a population of 200,000, 250,000. You see this all over the place. So we're way behind in transit.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know.
But again, regardless, all this is going to fuel real estate values. Because here's the thing. You start putting tolls, some people will reevaluate again. Maybe that house in the suburbs isn't really worth it anymore. Maybe I should get rid of my car and move to the city.
My time is valuable.
I want to live in the condo. Time, money, all that. There's also going to be that situation where you're going to have people that you start expanding transit. And guess what happens to real estate when you have a transit line going through it? It booms because everybody wants to live close to transit because of the convenience. You know, you want to drive up real estate values in Scarborough because there's some beautiful neighborhoods in Scarborough.
Put some subways in, man.
It's over.
Yeah. All right. I don't know how we ended up talking about subways, but
we went way off topic.
Being real. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Thanks, guys.